Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to the latest and greatest episode of the official Dom J Radio Show. This is episode 29. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for liking the show. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for subscribing. Appreciate all the love from the bottom of my heart. Of course, on this episode, we'll be diving into some of the latest news and sports, and we'll get into that after this message that I wanted to highlight during Women's History Month.
I am worthy. Women's Health Webinar. Please join us April 24th, 2021 for the I Am Worthy second session of the I Am Worthy Women's Health Webinar. Join us at c2bcreates.com to be empowered to create a life of health that equals wealth in mind, body, and spirit. Join us at c2bcreates.com for the I Am Worthy Women's Health Webinar Series 2. I am worthy.
As it is still Women's History Month, I definitely wanted to continue spotlighting women doing excellent things. And on this episode, we're celebrating the one and only, the incomparable Miss Issa Rae. She's extending her business relationship with HBO as Warner Media announced that it has a 5-year overall deal with Issa Rae, extending its relationship with the Emmy-nominated creator, executive producer, and star of HBO's Emmy-winning series Insecure. Issa's quoted as saying they've been supportive of her work since the very first general meeting that she had back in 2012. She's thrilled to not only spread her creative wings with a network that makes all of her favorite series, but also to produce culturally resonant stories with new voices that incite exciting conversations. All right, this latest exclusive deal with Warner Media will include all forms of television, including HBO, HBO Max, and Warner Bros. It also provides a first look for features with Warner Bros. Picture Group, New Line, and HBO Max. The deal will include projects that will be developed with Rae's media company, Hooray. And so I think, again, in the sense of celebrating people, especially in this month, with it being Women's History Month, celebrating Miss Issa Rae, I thought that was fantastic news, because you don't hear about 8-figure deals like this happening that often. So I definitely wanted to highlight that excellence, that, you know, women excellence, that black women excellence, because black women run the world and we all know it. So shout out to Miss Issa Rae. In news worth sharing that I definitely wanted to highlight, Evanston, Illinois will be the first city in the United States to give black people cash reparations. The city council approved the initial $400,000 worth of payments for black families affected by discriminatory practices. It has agreed to pay $10 million to eligible families over the course of the next 10 years. Now, you do have people on both sides that are for and against this, as they, but some that are against it believe it could possibly be the sullying of true reparations, in the sense that, yes, you take this payment from this specific city, but when the United States as a whole decides to give black people reparations, which is something we could be waiting on for in perpetuity, if we're being honest, they could then determine that you deserve less because you took that smaller payout at that moment. But luckily there are, like I said, some people that are for this. And you have Miss Delois Robinson speaking on how it directly impacted not just herself, obviously in this moment, but her predecessors as well.
My great grandmother, who was in Naviston, I guess you probably seen her since the late 30s, early 40s, and she was a business owner. And redlining affected her and her husband because they were trying to open a business in a well-established area at the state. but she was forced to just stay in one certain area to the point of she had to have the restaurant in her home.
Now, I think that's an interesting point because you do have still to this day redlining and gerrymandering going on where you have city councils and politicians trying to essentially confine and mitigate the voice of minorities and making it harder to do things like vote, open businesses, have access to tax breaks and those sorts of things. So again, in the sense of undoing some of the, you know, terrible historical implications that come along with the country of America, I think this is one of those positive steps in that direction. Do I think obviously that from a macro perspective, the United States would look at these sorts of smaller movements in specific cities as ways of then saying, well, you got that payment from them, so we don't have to give you as much. Obviously, yes, that would be something that, would I be surprised if it happened? Absolutely not. But would I also be surprised if uniformly Black people were all provided reparations from the U.S. government? That would be much, much more surprising than a city taking that into their own hands and into their own accounts, because they know what they've done within that city limit. So when you have, you know, future generations looking at how their ancestors were treated, how their grandparents and great grandparents had to struggle just to be financially stable and even to have some sort of financial literacy, if we're thinking of the historical implications, I think there's no way that I could be against this, in all honesty, because I don't see it happening on a grand scale. So if it's happening on a micro scale, and this is just a microcosm of things to come, I am here for it. When we're talking about reparations as a people, I think it's important for those that are outside of the culture to understand. So I want to provide some context and some perspective to put it in. When you're thinking of this country, and you can think whatever you want to about it, you can think it's fantastic, you can think it's perfect, you can think it has room for growth, room for opportunities, and room for improvements. The ideal of perfection as a country is something that I think is a dangerous sentiment, because that then means that you think things are basically capped where they stand, which would then be a point of deterioration from that point forward. I don't think this country has reached that, but if you're not going to address issues at their core, then you're just living in a facade and a sort of bubble that can be easily burst and is repeatedly burst as we see all the sorts of terrible things that happen, the discriminatory practices, the violence, all those sorts of outbursts against minorities that happen, I hate to say it, in a routine fashion. So if we're talking about it from a foundational aspect, the country founded by uprooting Native Americans. And if you don't believe in that being an uprooting, think of what I just said. Native Americans. They're native because they were already here. It wasn't Christopher Columbus journeying over and founding the country, because there were already people who lived here and had their land and cultures established. But when he and other Europeans got here and came with all the diseases and things of that nature, they decided, you know what? We're starting this over, because you guys are just some sorts of low-tier savages on the system that is race in this founding country. So we've also brought our slaves over because, hey man, we can't be building this country out by ourselves. We need some free labor, and we can do away with their rights as well, because, hey, again, they're on the lower tier of this ecosystem that we're establishing in the country. So if you're thinking from a foundational aspect, which is tracing back and getting to the roots of a country, it would be hard, in my estimation, I could be wrong, but it would be hard in my estimation for somebody to not understand how something as small as a town in Evanston, Illinois, a place I had never heard of before I had read this story, taking steps as a community to right some generational wrongs. I couldn't be more for it. For the featured sports segment on this episode, the NBA trade deadline this year proved to be as interesting as ever. We had a lot of official trades. We had Houston trading Victor Oladipo to Miami for Avery Bradley and Kelly Olynyk. Kyle Lowry and Lonzo Ball stayed put, but they were two high-profile players that, had they been able to be moved, could have been the difference for some teams making playoff runs. Kyle Lowry is basically Mr. Raptor, one of the greatest Raptors of all time. So, you know, I think the fans there will appreciate his still being there. The Raptors did end up trading Norman Powell to the Blazers for Gary Trent and Rodney Hood. The Magic traded Evan Fournier to the Celtics for draft picks. The Bulls acquired Daniel Tice from the Celtics. The Bulls also got Vucevic from the Magic, as well as another player whose name I can't think of, for Otto Porter and some draft picks. So the Bulls are really getting Zach LaVine some help. It was Wendell Carter Jr. They traded him, the center that they had drafted a couple years ago. He's headed down to Orlando as well. The Mavericks acquired J.J. Redick for Trey Lyles. Cavs traded JaVale McGee back to the Nuggets, so he's back on a team he's been to before. Raptors traded Terrence Davis to the Kings for a future draft pick. Hornets acquired Brad Wanamaker from the Golden State. Raptors traded Matt Thomas to Utah for a draft pick. Pistons traded DeLon Wright to the Kings for Corey Joseph in draft picks. And like I said, the Magic traded Nikola Vucevic, Alperen Aminu, and Otto Porter to the Bulls for Wendell Carter Jr. and some draft picks. And the Magic also traded Aaron Gordon to the Denver Nuggets for Gary Harris. And I believe it was Will Barton or some other young guy from the Nuggets. So they swapped there. An upgrade for the Nuggets as well. I know a lot of my fans here are some Nuggets fans. Shout out to y'all that's in that Broncos chat. Y'all always hold me down. Appreciate the support there. Y'all Nuggets are looking like they might be in contention for something this season. I'd be lying if I wasn't saying, in my estimation, the two MVPs, if I was looking at two big candidates this year, they're big men. I'm thinking Nikola Jokic and Joel Embiid. Unfortunately, Embiid got injured, and so he's really out of contention in that aspect. So right now, I really feel like it's Nikola Jokic's MVP award to really lose, man. So, you know, that's good for him, good for Nuggets fans. They seem to be adding some strength and obviously a prolific scorer in Aaron Gordon. So it should be interesting to see how they merge for the rest of the season. In other bad news, my Lakers, bro, down bad right now. LeBron, high ankle sprain, gonna have him out 4 to 6 weeks. And AD, still no definitive timetable for when he's going to be back. So right now, really leading the Lakers, you got Trez, you got Kuzma, and you got Alex Caruso. There's some nice pieces when you have your all-stars in place as well. But without the two all-stars, man, it's tough. They're basically losing every game right now. They're competing, though. Them boys are playing hard. So, you know what I'm saying? It's going to be interesting to see how these standings end up shaking out. I think it'll be interesting these last half of the season games because, again, with that new format for the playoff spot, you have a lot of people playing in for that 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th. I don't know if it'll be that 10th spot, but the 7th, 8th, and 9th teams will be trying to get in for that play-in spot. So should be an interesting back half to the NBA season. In entertainment news, there has been, I suppose, something I could consider as controversial that I have been enjoying from an entertainment perspective. I've recently been watching the Genius series on National Geographic. This installment is Genius Aretha, detailing some of the highlights and lowlight moments of Aretha Franklin's uprising in musical stardom to the Queen of Soul. But like I said, I think some of the negativity that's surrounding this entire project stems from the immediate family of Aretha Franklin feeling that they were not involved and they are not happy about it. One of the standouts in that was the 15-year-old Grace Franklin, who is the granddaughter of Miss Aretha Franklin, saying that as the immediate family, they feel it's important to be involved with any biopic of her grandma's life, as it's hard to get any accurate depiction of anyone's life without speaking to the ones closest to them. And so you can be seen, you know, in a certain sense, obviously, if you only have outside perspectives, which made it very interesting to me that there would only be outside perspectives in this project that tries to get, in some scenes, nitty and gritty you know, in some of the backstories. I won't spoil it for those that haven't seen it. It's still airing. I think it's obviously on the fourth night at the time of this recording. So if you haven't caught the first few episodes, you still have a chance to do so. But when you're having these sorts of, I feel like, you know, biopics take place and you hear this from the immediate family members that, hey man, we weren't involved in any sort of capacity, it does bring, at least in my estimation, into question the validity of the entertainment as a whole. So during the process of writing, directing, and filming the movie, the family reached out to Genius as a family on multiple occasions, but they felt they'd been disrespected and told that they wouldn't be worked with. So they don't support the film, and they also ask that you do not support the film because they feel that there will be many inaccuracies about their grandmother's life. Now, I have to respect that opinion. I will also, though, be finishing this biopic series. No disrespect, I'll be finishing this respectfully because it has been enjoyable. Obviously, I think when you're thinking of anything that's not autobiographical or not for a, you know, non-fiction context, I think there's obviously going to be some parts that are exaggerated and fictionalized, and, you know, ones that are completely fabricated in some instances. Unless you're obviously an immediate family member, you're not going to know all the nitty-gritty details about what's actual, what's true, and what's just pure fallacy. But I think from an entertainment perspective, there is some line of demarcation that has to be understood, because I think obviously from the production aspect, you're getting it from just those in the music industry that would have been working close with her. I believe those are some of the people that are executive producers on the show that were just in her circle from the musical aspect at that time. But if you don't have the familial aspect to it, the familial input to really give some of these scenes credit, it kind of makes more sense to me as to why I felt some of the scenes didn't go as deep as they could have gone and didn't really cover the breadth and depth of what Black, you know, family experiences, especially those on the rise to stardom, would have truly been like during the 60s and 70s. So while it has been an enjoyable experience, if you haven't checked it out, you know, based on the family's wishes, you may not check it out. Let me know if you have checked it out, what you feel, you know, was accurate from your perspective as far as what you knew about Miss Franklin going into it and what you feel has just been a wild, wild inaccuracy. I've enjoyed it. I think my wife has enjoyed it as well. We've been tuning in. I hate that the immediate family members of Miss Franklin feel otherwise, but I think knowing that there's going to be another adaptation of this with the Jennifer Hudson biopic of Miss Aretha Franklin that's supposed to be coming out, it'll be interesting to see, will this be something that we see repeated again? Because I would hate for her story not to be told, for her excellence not to be glorified, because the family feels that they're just not having the amount of input and the amount of available access to see what's true in the film and set the record straight. I'd hate for that to be the case, because it's really been some fantastic, I feel like, entertainment for the culture. Now, while, again, like I said, it's hard to imagine if you've been in the family and you know what's real and what's not, you're probably not giving this any time, not giving it any light of day. But I think, again, just from a pure entertainment perspective, this was interesting to me from National Geographic. I know they had other Genius series before this. I didn't watch any of those. But this has been entertaining, and knowing that there's another one on the way will be interesting to see. Does it compare? Will Miss Hudson be outdueling the star of this film, Miss Cynthia Erivo? Who knows, man? Should be interesting. But if you've seen it, let me know what your thoughts are.
What's good, official Dom J Radio listeners? It's your boy, Agent Jerry, stopping by to let you know Dom love the podcast, man.
As we all may recall from 2020, one of the key events in the country that really sparked a lot of the protests was the heinous killing of George Floyd by Officer Derek Chauvin. His trial has begun, and now that the jury has been selected, as well as the alternates for jury selection, they were trying to ensure the minimal amount of prejudice and the minimal amount of outside influence insofar as the jury selection went. But that's more so a minor story in the aspect that the city of Minneapolis has agreed to pay $27 million to settle a civil lawsuit from George Floyd's family over his death in police custody, even as, like I said, the jury selection has been solidified. The city council in Minneapolis emerged from a closed session to announce the settlement, which includes $500,000 for the neighborhood where Floyd was arrested. Floyd family attorney Ben Crump called a news conference and said that this was a powerful message sent out that Black lives do indeed matter. I wanted to speak on this story because I think it's obviously interesting, and you hope that this is some sort of solace to George Floyd's family, that they're getting this sort of retribution in a sense, but there's no amount of money that can ever bring back a loved one. There's no amount of money that can undo the trauma that anyone that witnessed the video, anyone that was on scene, and especially anyone that is in his family, it has experienced. There's no amount of money that can fix that. But this is the sort of justice that you don't always see in any of these sort of police involved shootings and cases. So I think it's obviously, you know, worth mentioning and speaking on. I hope that his family continues to stay strong, continues to seek justice, continues to be encouraged that they are not alone, that they have millions of supporters all across this great country, and that we are watching as this trial begins to ensure that justice does continue to be served. As that man stood and killed Floyd, stood on his neck with his knee in this man's body for over 8 minutes, we want to ensure that we do not forget. Even in the midst of the pandemic last year, you saw that police continued to wild out all over the country. And so in the civil lawsuit being settled, I'm happy in that sense. But again, man, I can understand and only imagine again what his family's still going through as they try to continue moving forward with their lives. I think this is something that I definitely wanted to mention and not pass up. So definitely rest in peace, George Floyd. We haven't forgotten about you.
Thank you for listening to the official Dom J Radio Show. The channel features artistic originals, special guest features discussing education and culture, and my takes on the latest news and sports. Subscribe to Official Dom J on WordPress and YouTube for more.
So I know a couple episodes I spoke about House Democrats passing an election reform bill that they introduced seeking to reduce voting barriers, entitled the For the People Act. It narrowly passed in the House by a 220 to 210 vote, but it, you know, obviously was expected to fail in the Senate due to the filibuster rule, and it did. But the bill itself aimed to enact a number of provisions, including restricting partisan gerrymandering and the automatic registering of eligible voters, as well as offer same-day registration. And had it passed, it would have signified the largest overhaul of election law in decades. Now, it hasn't passed. Obviously, it's really being stalled out by the filibuster rule in general. And it's in the midst of a time where you also have, because of this past, you know, election results, where we had record numbers of voter turnouts, not just for Democrats, but for Republicans as well. And it was the most votes for any presidential candidates ever, which was a great thing. You really got to see the entire country come out. And whether you were choosing one side or the other, at least you were making your voice and opinion heard. But of course, with that increased voter turnout, you've had a lot of propaganda about the fraud involved in the voting process, the, you know, dead people votes and all this other BS that, you know, you have lawmakers now using to pass bills that are restricting absentee voting eligibility. And this is happening in two key demographics that are Texas and Georgia. In Georgia specifically, state senators voted to pass SB 241, which is a bill that would repeal no excuse absentee voting, and it was passed into law in 2005. This new bill that, if approved by the state house, repealing that law would limit the number of people who can vote by mail-in ballots in upcoming elections. Georgia is one of several states to vote on changes to state voting laws this week. I think we've had some record number of states introducing similarly trash-ass bills. I think it's over 40 states that have introduced new voting restricting laws since the election. Now, Georgia is important because, as everyone knows, that was one of the states that flipped blue, largely in part to the efforts of Stacey Abrams and others like herself, getting out there and really rallying the people to get out and vote. And because when you're doing great works like that and the results show themselves true, you have haters, bro. Come out in droves and start doing things like this, introducing bills that they'll say, oh, no, we're just trying to ensure the validity of the votes, when you couldn't prove with any sort of relevant proof that there was mass voter fraud. So how will we say that introducing these sorts of bills isn't an attempt to restrict voters from voting is beyond me. I really don't see how they don't understand that correlation, but I often find that politics in these instances are trying to get people to play the fool and just plaguing upon people's ignorance or lack of understanding or lack of caring. But if you're in a state where they're introducing these sorts of bills, definitely keep your head into the news. Make sure you're abreast of what sort of changes they're trying to make, man, because they're going to make it harder to vote again after seeing how things came out in 2020. So, like I always say, it's important to be abreast of the changes that are going on in your local community. It's even more so important when you're doing those efforts that you make sure that your voice is continually heard by voting in your local elections. And like I always say, man, stay woke. You're trying to play the fool, but we're not falling for it. Now, in some unfortunate news, mass shootings in the U.S. have been on the rise over the course of this month. And really, between March 16th and March 22nd, just over the course of those 7 days, you had four more people shot, injured, or killed. March 16th, the greater Atlanta, Georgia area, you had eight killed. Stockton, California, on March 17th, you had five injured. Gresham, Oregon, March 18th, four injured. Houston, Texas, March 20th, five injured. Dallas, Texas, on the 20th, one killed, seven injured. Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, on March 20th, one killed, five injured. Boulder, Colorado, March 22nd, or just earlier this week, 10 killed. And so again, you're unfortunately getting one of these stupid debates about gun control or, you know, access for citizens to background checks and things of that nature. And I say it's one of those stupid conversations because, in my estimation, some of these things seem obvious. You want to make certain processes for everyday Joes that may or may not be within their full right capacities. You want to limit their access to certain things. That's obvious. That's why we have, you know, a certain age limit on driving. We have a certain age limit on when you can buy alcohol. We have a certain age limit on when you're able to rent a car or a hotel or a condo or something of that nature. And so in the sense of having background checks, like if you're trying to apply for a job, man, just a regular everyday thing that anybody needing income does, you may have to go through a sort of screening process. Now, why there seems to be continual debate on increased background checks and screenings for, you know, guns in this country seems to be a bit beyond me. But one thing that doesn't seem to be beyond random people in this country that often fit a certain profile of domestic terrorists is their ability to just go out and senselessly commit these sort of violent acts. Now, I'm all for the Second Amendment. You roll up on us, you're going to catch a couple of these handguns on you, all right? And so I respect that. I'm all for it. But when we're getting beyond that, if you're not a trained professional, you're not competing, doing large magazine, long range rifle drills and competitions, there's really no need for the general public, in my estimation, to really have access to that sort of ammunition. It's not for what it was originally created for, in the sense of having a, you know, a community militia ready and willing as needed, because that just doesn't happen here. There's too much bureaucracy. We have all our alphabet boys already in those capacities. And so I think it's an unfortunate circumstance, just been a rough past few weeks in the sense of all the senseless violence going on. So unfortunately, and ironically, I have to offer, obviously, thoughts and prayers to all those that were affected, but I don't do it in the sense of saying that that is enough. That's just the beginning for people who can't do anything. If you're in a position as a politician or public figure to enact change for your community or for those around you that are experiencing these types of heinous acts, why wouldn't you do so? Doesn't make sense to me, but again, I'm not just looking out for some agenda that I'm trying to push forward. I just am tired of hearing about the senseless gun violence, and I think anybody with a brain would be too. Now, in keeping up with coronavirus news, we do have some positives to speak on. And I know I just got done talking about Texas and Georgia in a negative light. So here's something positive to look at. Age 16 and up can get COVID vaccines on March 29th in Texas and March 25th on respectively. And actually, I have breaking news as I'm recording this. For residents of Florida, 40 and up are eligible for the vaccine starting Monday, this upcoming Monday, the 29th, I believe, and 18 plus are eligible starting April 5th to get the COVID vaccine. So this is long overdue, if we're being honest. And I say long overdue because it's been actually consecutive weeks going on almost, I want to say a month, the full month of March, to where the age of 60 and over has really been in effect, 55 plus for the last couple of weeks. But the amount of vaccines available compared to the amount of appointments booked and vaccines taken has been on the decline for that specific age range. Now, here specifically in Florida, they've vaccinated over 70% of the roughly 4.5 million seniors living in the state. Alleges, as had DeSantis, they've made great progress on those ages of 50 and older. They're trying to step up and take that step. And this all comes on the heels of President Biden targeting May 1st to have all eligible adults, who want the vaccine, able to take it. So he put out, that challenge essentially to all states. Hey, man, I want to have every adult over the age of 18 that wants the vaccine to have access to it by May 1st, so that hopefully by, that 4th of July weekend or whatever that people like to celebrate, there can be some sort of normalcy taking place. So Georgia this past week joined Alaska, Mississippi, Utah, and West Virginia in offering the vaccine to everyone at least 16 years old. Texas, Louisiana, Ohio, Oklahoma, and North Dakota plan to lower their vaccination eligibility to all adults on this upcoming Monday. So again, man, we're making some progress, and living here in Florida, that's good to hear, because at this point, we have plenty of COVID options for the vaccines. You've got your Pfizer, your Moderna, your J&J, you've got AstraZeneca on the way. And so to be able to sign up and get that essentially in the upcoming weeks. Now, it'll be interesting to see, will the, number of locations that it is available still be, as fluent as it is now, because there are many locations. You have your pop-up locations for the vaccine. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. I think at this point in time, I'm going to be in one of these lines to go ahead and get it, man. I might lean towards that Johnson & Johnson just because it's the one shot, and, be done with it in that sense. All of them essentially just trying to prevent you from getting the mild and severe symptoms and, having to end up being hospitalized due to COVID. But that doesn't mean, people, that we just slip up, stop wearing masks, washing our hands, and keeping distance in sort of, in specific instances, because yes, fully vaccinated people can still get the coronavirus. Now, you may not have, like I said, the mild to severe symptoms of people that aren't vaccinated, but that doesn't mean you just go around lollygagging it, because we're still trying to battle this as much as possible. So that's some positive news in keeping up with the coronavirus. And there you have it, episode 29 of the official Dom J Radio Show. Thank you to everyone that's listening. Thank you for liking the show. Thank you for sharing it with family and friends. Thank you for subscribing, making sure that notification bell is turned on so it dings and pops. You know what I'm saying? Want to thank everyone that's been coming on this journey for me and with me. And I hope that you continue to do so, because if you've seen me in March, man, really embracing this big Pisces energy coming into my own birthday season, your boy has gone 4 for 4. So, you know what I'm saying? A little pat on my own back for that sense. Thank you to my guest features. Thank you for those that are contributing behind the scenes in the effort to continue encouraging me to keep this going. Just a big thank you to everybody. So in the meantime, in between time, as always, stay blessed, drink plenty of water, and mind your business. Don't let them catch you slipping, y'all. Stay woke. Until the next episode. Peace.